This is WHFR Dearborn. And now for the next hour, our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Afternoon. This is the new afternoon. Yes, it is. It's a new WHFR Journal program, too. Jay Koronick with you here at the WHFR studios at Henry Ford Community College. And I'm joined today by our WHFR news director, Susan Morrell. Hello, Susan.
Hello, Jay. Another rainy day in Michigan.
You think?
Well, the weekend is going to be really nice. It's going to be sunny, and it's going to be spring.
Well,
60 degrees.
It's always good to start the show with some sort of positive thought. Too bad it's only about the weather, though. Okay, let's go into our first story here. I'm looking we always do catch up a little bit at the beginning of our story. Again, this is local news and views from Dearborn and the surrounding area that you can't get anywhere else on your dial. And today is April the 4th, 08. If you're listening from our website, our podcast, it may not be the 4th of April. But just remember, these shows are archived for about 12 weeks. Oh, my gosh. You can go back and download the MP3 version of the show and listen anytime you want, day or night. So if you can't listen live even on Fridays, those of you who are actually listening to your podcast now, it's probably not Friday. You're catching it some other time. And, well, thank you for listening, as they say. Sunday Times, that is the Sunday Times Herald edition from March 30th. Interesting story from Allen Park. An accounting mistake proves costly for their city budget. An accounting error by Ford Motor Company might cost the city of Allen Park nearly $800,000 in lost tax revenue from its $22 million annual budget. This month, Ford corrected an accounting error that had benefited the city for years. The automaker has been Allen Park's largest taxpayer. Interesting. I thought they were, I think they're also Dearborn's largest taxpayer, if I'm not mistaken, but they're Allen Park's largest taxpayer, too, but recently had a $60 million drop in personal property taxable value for 2008. Prices have gone down on mortgages and properties everywhere, I guess, including there. City Assessor Paula Griven said that personal property tax is based on assets that include machinery, tools, and equipment. Ford owns 17 properties in Allen Park and 10 personal property accounts. She said the automaker was reporting some assets in the city that are no longer there. Huh. Well, whose fault is that, again? And some were reported in error through Ford's accounting system. So because they made a mistake, they get to make up for their own mistake. And the city has probably already spent the money. Mayor Gary Burtka said the actual assets that they paid taxes to for Allen Park are now in Dearborn, North Fork, Virginia, and St. Louis. Talk about outsourcing. St. Louis. Wow. Allen Park suffered lost tax dollars in 2002, in fact, 6 years ago, when Ford applied for state pollution control exemption. Here's the quote. They found the error and are correcting it, but it is certainly hurting us in an already poor economic time. That's again Mayor Gary Burtka. There will be some capital improvements, he said, and that we won't be able to complete now, unquote. New dump trucks, salt trucks, and building improvements to City Hall and the police station will be placed on hold. Burtka said the city's reliance on one major taxpayer places it in a vulnerable position. As he said, another quote, whenever there are changes to their tax status, it will affect us, unquote. Ford spokeswoman Anne Marie Gattari said that the company does yearly inventory of equipment used in manufacturing and that the assets might have been moved from Allen Park to another facility mid-cycle. Ford's tracking system determines what actually is in Allen Park and refreshes its inventory to reflect an accurate count of equipment in all cities. And she said, most of that equipment is used for shipping and other operations. We located a discrepancy and made those changes accordingly. The tax shortfall does not affect the city's current budget, which ends June 30th. Burka said the city is currently $160,000 under budget. He said, we're running a lean machine. But it looks like for the year after that, they're going to have to take about $640,000 hit. Now, the good news is, even though it seems if it was Ford's mistake, why should they get the money back, in one sense? The other side of the coin, of course, is that any taxpayer that maybe paid too many taxes in the past and then discovered it, that the city, by the same example here, by the same precedent, I guess, would refund the money to you. I hope that's true for the average person. Somehow, a lot of us know that the large businesses get interesting tax breaks that the average person doesn't get, I guess because they employ a lot of people and they might generate a lot of money from other taxes and other ancillary ways. Nonetheless, I trust that that would be the legal case that even an individual who overpaid in previous years their taxes, once discovered, they could get a rebate. They could get an adjustment. I hope that's the case. Okay, what's happening in Lincoln Park, you ask? Sure, no problem. The story from Gary L. Thompson in last Sunday's Times, Lincoln Park, the city's administration continued to come under fire Monday, this last Monday, a week ago Monday, folks, for the court settlement recently reached with an adult entertainment business. This has been going on a couple weeks, folks. I haven't mentioned the story on the air here, but a number of residents, after picketing City Hall in Lincoln Park for an hour prior to the City Council meeting, they spent some time voicing concerns over the negative impact that the planned Larry Flynt, that's F-L-Y-N-T, Hustler Club, Larry Flynt was the publisher, I guess he still is, of Hustler Magazine, I assume it's still in publication, would have had on the community. Larry did win. Larry Flynt himself won a couple of major legal precedents back in the 70s and early 80s about freedom of speech and freedom to publish his magazine, which is certainly could be described as a little raunchier, a little more upsetting than Playboy is to some people. Okay, but I haven't seen that even on newsstands for quite a while. I don't know, at least the newsstands I go to anyway. I don't know if that's currently going. But apparently there's such a thing like Playboy used to have Playboy clubs. Larry Flynt has some sort of female entertainment, I assume, club that has its own name now, and or his company does anyway, and they're thinking of moving into a facility in Lincoln Park.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The settlement recently reached between the city and Papalis Drive Development, LLC, would allow the company to close the Park Theater on 4th Street, which shows adult films, right now, and open a club at the corner of John A. Papalis and Outer Drives. Some council members objected Monday to a recent letter from Attorney James Tam of the Michigan Municipal League, which helped negotiate the settlement. Mayor Frank Vaslow showed the letter on televised news broadcast, saying it proved the settlement had been authorized by the council in closed session. Members contended actually proved the opposite. Council President Thomas Murphy said it showed the 3 points the council wanted negotiated and says nothing about authorizing a settlement. So they're a little confused down there whether or not that's going to happen. I guess an adult theater is not as upsetting to people as the idea of a club that I assume has some sort of live female entertainment going on.
Well, what do you mean by a club? You mean a private club, a public club?
Well,
what kind of a club?
It doesn't say here, yes. There aren't too many private clubs in the area, and I don't think...
And what is going to go on at the club?
Well, that's it, exactly. when I say female entertainment, they are indicating here, for example, he demanded to know this one... city resident. Why city officials did not research such data before they sold us down the river, quote unquote, saying that residents should, and they are downriver, aren't they? And,
right.
In Lincoln Park. Anyway, saying that residents should not bear the cost of maintaining the strip clubs. Okay, it's a strip club. So we're talking about female entertainment. We're talking about women taking off their clothes. Erotic dancing. Whatever.
I didn't know Larry Flint was in that business. I thought he was just about a magazine.
I had not heard of a Larry Flint Hustler Club ever before, but again, I don't keep up on these things. So.
And why is he picking Michigan? Why is he selecting Michigan?
Well, I think the adult movie theater, which means that they have, you know, X-rated films, is already in Lincoln Park. The Park Theater is already showing these naked people copulating, okay, I assume, and so why not nude or semi-nude female dancing live? I mean, it's, you know, what's, I mean, there are differences, of course, living people and people on movie screens, but to certain people, both would be equally objectionable. So I think why did they pick Lincoln Park is because the movie theater had a clientele, which I assume might gravitate to the live club, too.
Well, so, you know,
it's just a marketing, a business decision that something like that, an adult business, quote-unquote adult, is already there, and now they're proposing a club. But certain residents feel that it's not appropriate. One even suggested is that Western European countries actually have to import girls for their business. So there's all kinds of speculation. They're going to import, you know, underage, or, I mean, and this is invalidated by the city. So we'll see where the city goes. I just want to introduce that the story is going on down there.
Well, I don't like to really be prejudiced against people, but Larry Flint, I would be a little suspicious of him.
I don't know
running
why,
a club.
Why his club would have that name. Some people know his reputation, and it's not all positive. Just because he won a couple of court suits for freedom of speech, he and his magazine don't have a clear, you know, positive record for just, let's say, wholesome adult entertainment. Playboy is closer to that, although many people disagree with
the
idea there. Some people are also suggesting that a club, unlike, I guess, a adult film movie theater, like, for example, it says here, the 82-year-old widow of a former city police officer in Lincoln Park expressed the desire for the city to be safe to walk the streets again as when she was a teenager. Now, and so the implication is, and I'm not sure it's a logical connection, is that a live adult entertainment club would generate crime problems.
Well, so, in my view, it depends on what type of a club it is and who's running it and things like that. My view of Larry Flint is that he is triple X-rated, okay?
Right, yeah.
There's different ratings, and he is like triple.
In your opinion, he gets the three X's.
He's triple X. He's the max. Okay. And I'd be a little suspicious,
Larry,
of.
In case you're listening and you have your lawyers there, just know that on this show,
his presentation.
The opinions expressed here are not necessarily those of anyone at Henry Ford.
You know, some things can be done with a little more style and class than other things. And I don't necessarily associate him with having very much class.
Yeah. Well, we covered that issue. Moving right along, folks.
I mean, Playboy has class. That's my estimation. Hugh Hefner has a lot more class than Larry Flint.
I think his eight girlfriends would agree, too.
Well, he only has three.
Oh, right now he's down to three.
Three.
Oh, poor Hef. Okay.
And they're, you know, they're pretty, they're very pretty cute girls.
Oh, okay. You know their phone numbers? No. Okay. Here's a Dearborn issue. Just joking, folks. From last Sunday, and this has been going on for a while, the city of Dearborn, if you hadn't heard, they proposed that maybe they'll have to close their neighborhood pools. And of course, one of our own staff members here at WHFR, Kristen Risbeck, she led a citizens action movement last year to make sure that the pools could be not just stay open in general, but to be open also in the evenings. The city wanted to close down evening hours for the pools, and she was successful in working out an agreement, she and another resident, with the city recreation department to keep them open. Well, now they're suggesting that maybe since the pools are getting old, they need a lot of rehabilitation, I guess, or modifications, and it is an expense, that maybe they should close them down. And the city has proposed, and Mayor O'Reilly, too, in couple of public sessions in the last couple of weeks that we haven't reported on either, that that they could become maybe splash pools. I guess they mean they fill them with only 2 or 3 feet of water, and the kids can just go and splash in them. It
no,
would be safer. So.
You're talking about the public pools over there in the park.
Well, they have 8 pools, apparently, here throughout Dearborn in different places of the city. And, let me read the story. While there's been no talk of actually closing completely any of the 8 Dearborn pools, the City Council Wednesday night, that is a week ago Wednesday, was briefed by Recreation Department Director Greg Orner, O-R-N-E-R, on the impact those summer havens have on the city budget. While a somewhat small number of Dearborn residents poured their hearts out over the possibility of losing their area pool, a master plan prioritization survey, capital M, capital P, capital P, of Recreation Department divisions conducted in 2005, it's only 3 years old, showed that pools ranked 9 out of 11 categories, one being the most important, 11 the least. So some sort of survey of people in Dearborn, hopefully representative, said, we don't care about those pools. They're not very important. And so the mayor has said, we know some people said the pools were most important to them, but each area of the recreation department has different costs, Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly said. Next Friday, by the way, we will have Dearborn Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. right here, right on this show, folks. It is our WHFR Radiothon week, and in fact, the pledges will start being taken today on the Highway 61 show for the first time from 2 to 6 today. Just a little head start on our pledge drive that officially starts Sunday morning and goes for 1 week. So this is not today the new WHFR Journal pledge show. That is next week. And on that special show, somewhat a tradition over the last almost a dozen years now, I think, to have the mayor of Dearborn as our special guest. And Mayor O'Reilly has been generous with his time, last year, and also he's coming back again this year. And so we'll check and see what the pool situation is, and it's a tough call. I mean, certainly if the general population in Dearborn doesn't have too much interest and doesn't use the outdoor pools too much. I mean, we do have a great indoor pool, but to get to that, you have to pay money each time. And I know to use the Dearborn outside pools, well, of course, I'm wrong with that. You can buy a monthly pass or a family pass to the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center pool, so that you don't have to pay each time. I guess they do have a day pass too, but I think it's more expensive than the ticket or the armband or whatever that they got that you would get in advance to use the Dearborn pools.
But okay. It is majorly a budgetary concern.
Yeah, well, it's expensive. Exactly. And so, therefore, O'Reilly said, we have to find out if things are costing us general fund revenue or are they supporting themselves. Apparently, they feel that the recreation department, every activity itself should support itself. And, of course, there are different ways of looking at that. I personally think that the overall recreation department probably should break even if they can, but I think the more popular activities, they should help pay for the less popular but still important. I mean, if some people, even if it's only like 5% of the city of Dearborn, really loves and uses those outdoor pools a lot day and night, I would hope that the rest of Dearborn would want to chip in a little extra on some of the other activities to help them out. Of course, how much more will they be paying, blah, blah, blah.
Right, okay. But Jay, I think it's a very nice outlet for kids to have, kids and teenagers and adults to be able to go into a pool. But what I'm wondering about Dearborn is how much are they actually promoting those pools? I don't think they promote them at all.
Well, they do. There's general, you don't live in Dearborn, so you wouldn't know, but they do send out books. Recreation Department sends out books. It's either annual or twice a year. I think it's twice a year in terms of all the Recreation Department activities and the cost from the center. The problem with the pool in the center, of course, it's indoors and rain or shine. It's always nice, but it's not conveniently located for kids just to walk you know, a few doors or a few blocks to get to. So it's not in their neighborhood, and that's it's a location issue, I think, more with that. And it's less hassle, I think, just in general to have the neighborhood pools.
Convenience.
Well, but no, the city does send out these major books that list all the things like from Camp Dearborn and the local pools and Special Recreation Department sponsored concerts at some of their parks. And I think it's twice a year. So we do get those, of course. They get misplaced, and then you forget about them. But and the problems with some of the activities or some of the rules for the use of them, it's kind of complicated. Where do you get the ticket, and during what hours? And so you do have to plan ahead. It's not just sort of drop in and use the park for jogging or something, which is free still. The local parks are still free. Well, let me just finish this story by mentioning that the Recreation Department here in Dearborn, since 2001, has eliminated 9 full-time positions in an effort to keep services at a high level. Well, that's contradictory. You don't eliminate people in an effort to keep them at a high level. That doesn't make sense. But to keep the costs down, of course, you eliminate. But they're trying not to, you know, lay off more people than needed. The cuts included the assistant director, the sports supervisor, and the director's clerical assistant. So the director has to do his own typing, I guess. I don't know. The pools, which are all at least 46 years old, are beginning to show their age, as each pool is in need of filtration renovation.
That sounds expensive.
I think I had that a few years ago myself, in fact. Filtration renovation. Dunworth, the city's most popular pool, had its filtration system replaced in 2005 at a $1.1 million project.
Oh, my goodness.
Those must have been dirty filters. 46 years of... No, they probably changed the filters, but they needed to change the piping probably, too, and pumps and stuff. Cost to renovate the filtration systems of 4 other pools, Ford Woods, Lapeer, Ten Eyck, and Summer Stevens, the former two, which will be completed this spring, cost in total about $450,000. City officials acknowledge that the improvements are necessary, but Orner said the aging pools make it difficult, if not impossible, without large capital investment, up to $500,000 a pool, to continue operating 8 outdoor pools. Of course, would that hold us for another 46 years, though?
Well, but I mean, perhaps they don't need so many pools. Maybe they don't need 8.
Right. Well, here's the idea. One way to not looking to close pools, just to decrease expenditures that people haven't liked, would be the addition of splash parks, which are outdoor aquatic recreation areas that feature slides and other amenities. In his slideshow that Orner did at some point in front of city council, Orner pointed out that the city's current budget situation, splash parks might not only provide a cost-effective alternative to pools, but it could also bring an exciting new aquatics feature to the community. So you just go, you splash. It's not deep enough to swim unless you're two foot high, I guess. and you know, because there's water trickling down these slides, it's like an amusement park, water park, but on a very small scale. So they're saying that the city would save more than $600,000 over the period in a 5-year plan, that moving to a splash park would be a reduction overall of about the revenue for it, though. People wouldn't pay as much for a splash park as a ticket or a tag as they would for going to a real pool, I understand. Would reduce the income about $10,000 a year. But they would save the city more than $600,000 over 5 years by going to splash parks.
I think a splash park is a good idea, but I also think they should consider a water park, because a water park attracts adults.
Right. Well, we do have really a water park in the city of Dearborn Community Center. So they do have.
Right, but it's not an outdoor.
No, it's not outdoors.
And, outdoor is
and
more fun.
It does
fun.
Cost more to get into that.
Yes. Yeah, outdoor is more fun.
Yeah. So anyway, that's another issue from Dearborn. It's a hot issue, even though a pool's supposed to cool you down. And we'll follow that along. And Mayor O'Reilly will be here next week, not just to talk about splash parks. We're going to ask him questions about a little bit of everything that's going on in the city of Dearborn, and maybe he knows some stuff to make some special announcements about, too. Let's just finish this up. We have some larger issues and national issues that Susan has brought in, and we want to cover those, too, but we're still not quite halfway through our hour. This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek and Susan Morrell with you today on August the 4th. We're making waves here at WHFR, and even more waves, or continuing the same waves. That's a pool reference, making waves, too, in our broadcast version of a splash pool. our show could be seen as a broadcast splash pool. We're making waves in it. Looking at Wednesday's Press and Guide, folks, and thumbing through here, thumb and forefinger both. Ooh, this is important. We have a wrestling match, a arm wrestling match. That's great. Okay. I saw three, and we can't feature all of these in detail, but there's three great opinions on the Press and Guide this Wednesday. Usually they print letters from people, and the people make comments in a paragraph or two, a couple sentences in some cases. And that's great to know what their opinions are, but it's even better to know the reasons behind their opinions. And so what we have here is a great example of three what I would call essays, or editorial opinions that are extended essays. And extended, I mean, they're only still about 200 or 300 words. One is from Tupac Hunter. First I thought he was some sort of rapper, but I apologize. It states Senator Tupac Hunter, Democrat from Detroit. He represents Michigan's 5th District that I didn't know about, which includes Dearborn Heights, Northwest Detroit, and Inkster. Yes. So, Susan, had you heard of Tupac Hunter?
No, I haven't.
Well, again, you're probably not living in his district either.
Well, I live in Dearborn Heights.
I know. But, he's your state senator.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay. Well, He has an essay that basically supports Senator Jennifer Granholm, Governor Jennifer Granholm's State of the State address, in that we should start investing in Michigan in renewable energy and use it as a basis for economic revival here in the state. That's the way everything has to go in the future. Why shouldn't we go there now and generate jobs specifically in this area for renewable energy and the way to introduce it? I'm going to be announcing that WHFR, we have already started investigating, that's as far as we've gotten, investigating a plan to put up solar panels on the roof of our building here to power our transmitter and to build up battery power in case electricity goes down, so that we can be a constant community resource in time of need. Very, very local, too. City of Dearborn suggested that to us way back in 2003, when they did not have a very good way to get the messages out that they had to, when there was no power in the area for 4 days. If you remember that little, it was the whole northeast part of the United States that went down for about 4 days. And Dearborn went down. Not all of Dearborn went down for 4 days. My house was without power for 4 days.
Yes, yeah, so I was without power.
In East Dearborn. Henry Ford Community College happened to get power back within a day. But we want to be a true community resource, and we want to eventually be energy independent of even the city. In fact, wouldn't this be cool that we... our solar panels would be enough to give energy back into the grid, in other words, so that other people could use. Well, no, that we can't power the whole city of Dearborn from WHFR, but we're working for that, folks, and it's going to take a little investment, a little cooperation. We're going to start talking to the city again. We're working with the energy technology program here at the college and our physical plant at the college, and we're just getting started. But that's another way we're making waves, making use of light waves.
Light yes. waves.
There you go.
Yes, from the sun.
So you can read State Senator Tupac Hunter's statement. Very reasoned, very intelligent. It does support pretty much what Jennifer Granholm was suggesting. But read about that. It's on the editorial page of the Press and Guide this last Wednesday, April 2nd, 2 days ago. And then Susan DeMoss, who is a political analyst for the Michigan Information and Research Service.
Okay.
I don't know who they are, but nonetheless. And she was also a former editor at the Battle Creek Inquirer. So she had to do something. I guess she had to find a new job. I wonder if the Battle Creek Inquirer is still publishing. Anyway, she wrote this very intelligent statement that is against the recall of House Speaker Andy Dillon. And we've covered that for several weeks. We know that locally, Rose Bogart and the Michigan, Wayne County Taxpayers Association, which is against paying taxes, sort of a contradiction in terms. The Wayne County residents that don't want to pay taxes, that would be the better. So the taxpayers that don't want to pay taxes, or certainly a lot less, a lot fewer taxes, they have a petition drive, and of course they would like to recall everybody that in our state legislature that voted for higher taxes for anybody for any reason. But all they could do with their own resources was to target the majority leader, the Democrat from the House of Representatives, and that's Dearborn Heights Representative Andy Dillon. And so she has a very reasoned argument here about why that should not happen. And as I said, you may not agree with the reasoning, but you should read it all the way through. Now, Chris Phillips at the bottom of the page, Chris is a Dearborn resident. And because his name is spelled C-H-R-I-S, it could be a woman. Okay, my ex-wife was a Chris. Okay, so never know. But in any event, Chris Phillips says, after attending the Recreation Committee meeting that took place March 25th at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, I'd like to commend the committee on producing a presentation that will ensure the closure of our pools. The recommendation focused on all the negative issues that have risen due to years of poor planning and neglect of our pools, with no mention of the positive benefits the pools provide to our city. So it seems like I would like to commend the committee. I think that's a satiric comment. That's a cynical, snide remark there at that point, because it says the presentation is a perfect example of a pre-desired recommendation that stacks the deck to ensure the demise of a city gem and one of a few remaining gems that differentiates our city from the rest of the cities competing for prospective homebuyers. You may not have any children who use the pools, but the inability to sell a home for a fair price affects every homeowner in Dearborn. It was pointed out that there are no comparable cities with the amount of neighborhood pools that Dearborn has. I look at this as a glaring opportunity we need to capitalize on. There are plenty of cities with main streets lined with bars, nightclubs, and empty storefronts, but there are very few with city services that include pools like Dearborn. We have a great foundation. Let's build on it, not tear it down. And you can read on the article and go into more depth yourself, folks. But that's Chris Phillips' editorial, and it's, as I said, I really like that as an intelligent person. I respect other intelligent people. And I want to get the rationale, the reasons, the explanations from people that goes along with their opinions and their judgments so that I can decide whether or not I can agree with them, whether or not I want to change my own opinions if I already had any. And I think it's great to have editorials, not just little clipped letters from the editor, which might actually be longer. Sometimes these letters to the editor are actually, the editor of the paper actually does cut them down to just a statement or two. So we don't get the reasoning behind it. And that's the important thing. Do they have good reasons, good facts, good explanations behind their opinion that would cause us to want to support it, change our ideas about it? And so please read those and follow up with that. Okay, we're halfway through. This is the new WH4 Journal, and Susan Morrell is here, and she is going to fill us in. We're going to jump to, well, a couple of issues that are bigger than just local city, daily issues almost. Where did you want to start?
Well, everybody's talking about this mortgage crisis, and it is a terrible situation, self-induced, in my opinion, by the people in the mortgage business. They created these documents that they weren't sound business documents, in my opinion, and they led people astray. And people who purchased homes, unfortunately, as we've discussed here on WHFR, did not read their contracts, did not bring an attorney to their closing, signed documents they did not realize what they were signing, and now we're in the middle of this disaster, and it was created by a lot of greed and the mortgage business, but that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. But anyway, here's an editorial opinion from the Detroit News. It says, don't shift.
And that is today's or yesterday's?
This is from Thursday, April 3rd, okay. 2008.
Detroit News editorial.
It says, don't shift the mortgage burden to taxpayers, and I agree. It says, the key principle that should govern any federal legislation to aid homeowners and lending institutions in the mortgage crisis is that American taxpayers should be protected. Absolutely, this is true. Unwise mortgage lenders and unwary or sometimes unscrupulous borrowers should not have an unending claim on the federal treasury. I agree 100%. And now, the Democrats and Republicans, their senators, are working on legislation, and here's what they want to do. They want to authorize $10 billion in bonds to refinance home loans, $4 billion in funds for cities to buy foreclosed homes, a $200 million counseling program for homeowners facing foreclosure. I think that's outrageous. And a tax credit for buyers of foreclosed homes. I mean, in my opinion, where's this money coming from? It's coming from taxpayers.
Let me indicate, therefore, or sum this up, is that the Detroit News, and they're known for their conservative points of view, they're saying that the people that were not just, well, irresponsible on both sides, if not doing something illegal or immoral, but greedy, selfish, irresponsible, or just unintelligent, should receive the consequences of their actions, that there shouldn't be buyouts or support or assistance for either the mortgage grantors or the mortgage getters, that if you made bad choices. So it seems to me, isn't this true, though, that the general taxpayers, they're saying, should not help either side.
Well, I agree totally. I mean,
oh, you do.
$200 million for counseling for homeowners facing foreclosure. I think that's outrageous. Then they want to give $400 billion to the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration, to insure mortgages.
I haven't heard the $400 billion amount, but you're reading it right from the
billion.
Paper. Yeah. We do know that both Hillary and Barack, although they're not, well, Hillary is still a senator, but they're both proposing, I think $20, $30 billion of assistance. I think their proposals say assistance to the people that might have been duped or misled or just in terrible situations. We do know about the Bear Stearns buyout on what the Wall Street investment bankers that we were told. And what? How much was that? I thought that was $50 billion. That the government put into buying Bear Stearns and supporting them so that I think J.P. Morgan, which is another company, another investment banking company in Wall Street, has ownership of their assets. But the buyout money that was required came from the federal government, $50 billion. But we're told, again, by not just George Bush and his administration, but by others, if Bear Stearns would have been allowed to go under, the ripple effects would have gone down to hurt every average taxpayer in the whole country, that their savings, their investments, the interest rates they'd have to pay after that, would have been a disaster. Now, that's what we're told. I don't quite understand that trickle-down effect, because the other trickle-down effect, which means if the people at the top don't have to pay as many taxes, if they get big tax breaks, even if other people don't, everybody benefits, that there's a trickle-down effect of savings and benefits to the economy if the rich, the big companies and the rich people, get tax rebates, even if no one else does. And that hasn't been proven, my reading of most economists, to ever work. So this other trickle-down, I'm not so sure. I'm very suspicious, although even some liberals say, oh, yeah, if they didn't bail out Bear Stearns, the whole country would be belly up, because everything is interconnected financially now. Everybody's got a piece of every other action. Well, I don't, but that's what I'm told real rich people are. But so I'm a real big believer, as most libertarians would be, of personal responsibility. You should not sign a contract if you don't understand what you're signing. Some people with adjustable rate mortgages, though, And they knew that if things would change, the mortgage interest rate might go up. And they were hoping for a good economy to keep that low. And, of course, it didn't happen. And some of those rates were able to jump, I think, double in 1 year, and that's why they couldn't start paying their payments, because the payment like doubled in 1 year, and the thought was, or I guess it's still possible, that some of these payments would double again before next year. And so that's a basic reason for the foreclosure. So I know my mother and father, who just, my dad, you know, didn't even graduate from high school, my mother did, but they always said, of course, they went through the frugal times of the Depression and so on, don't get an adjustable rate mortgage. Just get a fixed mortgage. You can count on that payment until it's paid off. That it's just too risky to take the chance. And they weren't even well educated, and they knew that.
Well, I mean, this is very simple contract law. I mean, in my opinion, this is not difficult. And the people, the mortgage people that set these loans up this way, they knew that people weren't going to be able to pay this.
Right. I said last week when Ned was here, I said, whereas even I had a general business class in the ninth grade in high school, which basically taught me, like, what is a checking account? What's a savings account? My daughter never even had such a class in Dearborn schools. She had no knowledge of what a checking account or savings account was until she asked me. And I couldn't believe she's already a graduate and she doesn't know anything about, well, where do I put my money? How do I get a check? No clue. Our schools should be doing some educating here. But it's basically just principles my mother and father taught me that kept me on a straight and narrow path. I'm not super rich, but at this point, this month, it's hard to believe, I'll be totally out of debt. Oh, except for my house, of course, but I've got a fixed rate mortgage, you know, that I can count on. So where is the education here in the long run? I do think that the schools have some blame over the last couple of decades, the K-12 system, for not teaching basic financial savvy to everybody. But, yes,
but
the
Jay.
People that gave out these mortgages and that, they sold them like it was a great deal and signing the dotted line and you can have that big house. So they're to blame too.
But
absolutely.
Jay, even if you didn't have a finance class, if you learned how to read, when you were in grade school, you should be able to read a contract that says your adjustable rate is going to double in 5 years or 3 years or 2 years. That is very simple English. I don't think that's difficult to understand. But now my problem is all of these $415 billion, that's all taxpayer money going to a bailout.
Yeah. I my basic feeling, I guess, and I hate to say this because it seems so cruel, although I'm in favor of long-term fixes here, and say, well, short-term, maybe some of these, but I mean, long-term fix was, let's get some education going in the K-12 about basic financial decisions and how to be smart about that, as well as reading skills, yes.
Basic literacy.
You know, and why is it that we have a higher percentage now than 20 years ago of students that don't even graduate from high school?
But Jay,
who's responsible for that one, I'd like to know.
It goes beyond literacy, because you know what? It wasn't really even literacy. People were too lazy to even read it. It was more laziness.
True, yeah.
They didn't want to go through the contract and read it.
Mm-hmm. Again, my parents, only one of whom went to high school, never would sign a contract until they saved up enough money to hire a lawyer to read it over first.
And how much would an attorney have cost?
Well, these days it might be $200 for a simple reading of somebody to sit down. Well, I mean, before they sign the mortgage,
right?
I think it's $200 or $250. Some lawyers might charge more of just being there and going over it and seeing if there's anything that's really strange or out of place or dangerous, you know, because they know these contracts from prior experience.
Sure.
A real estate agent and or a realtor, and there are differences in designations here, folks, they might know the difference. They might be your advocate, but they're not lawyers. They're not experts in contracts. They've learned a lot. Some are better than others, though. you need to trust a lawyer. And I'm not trying to get work for lawyers here, but it's worth the time and the money. If you don't know much about mortgage contracts, you need an independent analyst. The trouble with a real estate agent or a realtor, and I'm not against using these people for what they're good for, but they're getting a percent if it goes through.
They're getting a commission.
So they are not totally objective here. The lawyer will get paid whether you sign the mortgage agreement or not, right? Because they're working for you on your behalf. And so either way, they get the same amount, whether they say it's good to sign or bad to sign. So that's why it's probably better to go with an independent lawyer who comes along with you before you sign that contract and looks it over. Maybe they want to see it in advance, a couple days in advance, to go over it, not just on the spur of the moment, too.
But realtors they get a license in every state, and that license tells the realtor that they have a fiduciary relationship with their clients, and they are supposed to advise each client to bring an attorney to the closing.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say I don't have much sympathy for bailouts on either side. I don't know if I can be as totally against them as the Detroit News editorial there, but we need some long-term fixes. Whether it's reading improvement in the high schools or fiscal education classes in the high schools, but you got to keep the people in the high schools too so that they take the classes, the relevant survival skill classes, in fact, in financial issues, as well as regulation of the mortgage grantors and those procedures and policies. There used to be something, and where is it now, is that every contract had to be written in straightforward, simple, plain language, not legalese. And I don't know where...
I think that's changed.
I think that's gone.
Yeah, that's changed. The lawyers took over on that one.
I don't know.
No, okay. The finance people, yeah.
So
lawyers.
So if you've got a chance to look it up, folks, it's probably on the Detroit News website, which is what, detroitnews.com or something?
I'm sure.
Something like that, and see where you stand on that. I think a lot of us, again, if we're not suffering, if you're suffering, you want somebody to help you.
I think it's DET News, DETnews.com.
That's right.
Obviously, you know my opinion on this. So.
Sure. We have a couple of other stories. Let's just jump to the national story just very briefly. Ralph Nader is running for president. A lot of people think he shouldn't have done that in 2000. He shouldn't have done that in 2004, even more. And he's announced he's running again. Why do we mention this here on WHFR Journal, a local news show? Only because there are more choices. There will be more choices, whether it's Nader or not, in Michigan. But there will be other choices for president of the United States on the ballot here in Michigan. More than just a Democratic nominee, whether it's Barack or Hillary, or both of them together on the same ticket, and John McCain as a Republican. There will be more parties, more people, and maybe you will agree with the policies and the goals of a candidate from another party or an independent candidate, Mike Gravel, senator, Democratic senator from where? Is it Montana or Alaska? He's now given up on the Democratic Party, and he says he wants to run as an independent candidate for president. Of course, how do you get on the ballot, at the last minute? It is kind of the last minute to get an organization together. But Ralph is an independent candidate, no party affiliation this time. He's told the Green Party, who are going to meet in July to pick their candidate, he's not going to be a Green Party candidate. Thank you very much for thinking about him, but he's not going to run on that ballot. And sort of similar to Representative Ron Paul, who's a Republican, the Libertarian Party put out an overture to ask him, now that he can't be a Republican nominee, to be their presidential candidate, because they will probably have ballot access already in every state, in all 50 states, and they wanted him, a former Libertarian who ran previously for president as a Libertarian back in the 90s, and he has said no to that. Well, what does Ralph stand for? You just have a summary statement, don't you, Susan, there, that
yes.
Some of these issues, and just we can't go into great detail, but just remember that he will probably be on the state of Michigan ballot as an independent for president. You might say, well, I don't want to vote for him if he can't win, but just remember, folks, if everybody that believes in the principles of that person don't go ahead and vote, whether they think they can win or not, they're definitely not going to win, right? They're definitely not going to win. So that would be silly then. Now, there's different philosophies of who and why you should vote, but let's just review currently. Ralph Nader, he's got his website too. Nader for President, is it?
Well, it's called VoteNader.org.
Okay,
VoteNader.org. And Ralph Nader has 12 issues that matter for 2008. I'm just going to read you the list. Now, these are his issues. Obama, Clinton, and McCain are not discussing any of these issues. And these are all very, very important issues.
Go ahead.
Number one is adopt a single-payer national health insurance.
Yep.
Number two, cut the huge, bloated, wasteful military budget. Number three, no to nuclear power. Put solar energy first. Number four, aggressive crackdown on corporate crime and corporate welfare. Number five, open up the presidential debates, because they're not allowing Nader to debate.
Or any third-party candidate.
I mean, it's outrageous. Yes. It's not fair. Number six, adopt a carbon pollution tax. Very interesting. Number seven. No, wait a minute. I'm off on my numbers.
Well, I think there ought to be a tax on anyone that pollutes, and a sizable one, whether they're polluting our air, our water, or just wasting energy. But go ahead.
Okay. I think this is number eight. Reverse U.S. policy in the Middle East. Yes. Let's do that. Number nine. Impeach Bush and Cheney. Well, I think it's a little late for that. I'm off on my numbers. Anyway, the next one, repeal the Taft-Hartley anti-union law, Jay. Repeal the Taft-Hartley anti-union law.
He wants to do that?
Yep. So one of his 12 issues.
Right. Yeah, I mean, unions have been proven over the years to be great, but there's a lot of restrictions on them now that people can't even join one if they wanted to in some cases. There should still be that right, and there should be support for unions. I've been a union. My dad was a union member in the auto industry. I've been a union member as a teacher. Nothing but good things to say. We need them. We desperately need them, and we need to, take any restrictions away from the formation of unions.
Okay, here's number 10, adopt a Wall Street securities speculation tax. Number 11, put an end to ballot access obstructionism. I don't know what that means, but okay.
Well, it means that... there's very, very high requirements in some states to get on the ballot. Now, the Libertarian Party, I mentioned, they expect to be on all 50 state ballots because they were able to get a high number of votes or a high enough number of votes in a previous election. But what about Senator Mike Gravel? To get on the ballot, he has to start a petition drive, and in some places it might be hundreds of thousands of votes they have to get within a 90-day period. And for someone who's just jumping, you can't do that. So I think it's some of these. I mean, it's okay to need a certain number of signatures, but it can't be totally unrealistic, this week Jack Lesenberry writes how Jack Kevorkian, yes, Dr. Death as he's nicknamed, the man that was in favor of doctors being part of an official legal assisted suicide program, that he's running in Michigan as a representative, or he's going to try to, but he's got to get 3,000 signatures within 90-day period. And Lesenberry points out that he doesn't drive anymore. He's in his 80s. I mean, he doesn't have too many friends, unfortunately. Why shouldn't his name be on the ballot? Why should, that 3,000 people, it would be 100 signatures a day for each day that's available or still remaining, and it seems almost impossible. So more realistic, though, at the presidential level, we need the fact, we need lower access numbers in some states.
Okay, let me go on with number 12.
Finish 12. We got to go.
Work to end corporate personhood. Yes, Corporations are not people. They should not have the same legal rights as people. These are the 12 issues that matter for 2008. Yep. This is Ralph Nader for President 2008, and go to the website, votenader.org.
We're the only country in the world, to my knowledge, civilized, big-time country, that has legal protection for corporations as if they were an individual. We're talking about privacy. We're talking about freedom of speech, freedom to pollute. It's unconscionable.
It's outrageous.
Yes, that they must be held to a higher standard because they're not individuals.
And it's not ethical.
Well,
it's not ethical.
Yeah. These very important to keep in mind, folks, that there are big issues. None of the three candidates we talk about right now or the two-party system is giving enough attention, any major credence whatsoever, to the issues that that Ralph Nader has.
So, and the media is not the commercial media is not talking about Ralph Nader. They're not letting him talk. They're not letting him getting on any of the shows.
The same thing goes for Green Party candidates. Even Ron Paul, when he's running for the Republican nomination, never got equal attention. Even Mike Huckabee complained, I'm not getting equal attention. And he wasn't, for his points of view, because they were thought to be either out of the mainstream or not supported by a lot of people. The only way you can get new ideas and better ideas support is for the media to give them equal attention. That's all anybody's asking for is equal attention.
And what they're doing is overkill Obama, Clinton, and McCain. The same things over and over and over and over and over. It's so repetitious.
There you go. At least locally, we can try to, you know, in our show here, which we have to conclude now, we can at least try to get your attention every now and then refocused on these other ideas which are out there. And that's a goal of WHFR Making Waves, is to get you thinking about things that the other radio and TV stations don't either want to or don't have time in between their commercials to do. Now, I want you to stay tuned. We're going to close the show today, and I do thank Susan Morrell, our WHFR News Director, for sitting in with me today. But we're going to close the show with our Night Sky Report from Carrie Zaitz. We go from the earth to the stars, as we say. Lighten it up a little bit here.
Yes, Jay. We're so serious.
Well, we are. There's a lot of serious stuff. And we hope everybody's going to keep thinking, keep working, and continue for the next 4 hours to support WHFR with a pledge of support. That's Joanne Korchinska, Highway 61, coming up as soon as our show concludes here. So stay tuned for the kickoff to our 2008 Radiothon 2008 Pledge Drive. And we hope you'll stay tuned in today and during the next week, and next week Friday for Mayor O'Reilly of Dearborn to be interviewed on this show.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks, Susan. Here is Carrie Zaitz with our Night Sky Report.
Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your Night Sky Report. In January, solar scientists found their first robin of the sun's spring. It was a sunspot, a little black dot on the visible surface of the sun. This spot was somehow different from the spots that had come before and from spots still on the sun. This spot had a different magnetic polarity and was different in a different place than the previous spots. The news was clear. The long-awaited first sign of solar cycle 24 had arrived. The sun's winter, known as solar minimum, was midway through, and the new solar cycle had begun. The analogy of spring can only be taken so far. The sun does go through activity level changes, just like we do in different seasons, and these changes are related to the sun's average temperature. But the sun doesn't have seasons, just an ongoing 11-year cycle of magnetic storm activity. It turns out that the sun's average temperature is lower during the multi-year lull in sunspot activity, and it's greatest during the peak, called solar maximum. Like a human going through puberty, the sun's face is always changing, and its most noticeable feature is the scattering of spots on its face. The spots indicate areas where the turbulent and twisted magnetic field lines are organized and the normally bright plasma of the sun is slightly cooled and darkened. They appear darker against the bright background of hotter plasma, and that is what we see as a sunspot. Sunspots often form in pairs or groups. They have a system of polarity, just like magnets have south and north poles. They form in somewhat predictable ways throughout an entire solar cycle. One of the clues scientists have been looking for is the switch in polarity of spots that form in either the northern or southern hemisphere of the sun. This is one of the clues that indicate the official end of cycle 23 and the beginning.